Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today, as usual, by...
Leander Unati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati.
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Daniel Rice calls me Cobble Cobble.
Cobble, cobble.
Feel good. Gobble, gobble.
Turkey time, also, cobble, cobble.
And also scary.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, the idea of a turkey, Jeremy, is like a little alarming. Yeah, like that running towards me.
There's exactly definitely going to be an enemy in Wagadu at some point. Who's
Turkey Jeremy.
It's just some African turkey. I just forgot we had the turkey in the Christmas special.
Oh yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's where the PTSD came from. Because as soon as you made that noise, I was like, what's that feeling inside of me? Something's
gone
wrong.
And no one outside of America, I feel like, knows. Well, maybe some Europeans do, but I don't think you have turkeys in the UK, do you?
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. Cool. So before we dig into this week's episode, we have some new patrons to thank. Woo-hoo. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
So we have three new patrons this week. We have Kelsey. Then my agent, guys. My agent is a patron. So big shout out to Carried On Associates for supporting the show. Much
that
love.
Makes me laugh so much. I love it.
It's so good.
A company.
It's so good.
It's literally listed as a company among our patrons.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing that, just like, we have a corporation as a patron?
Yeah. And then 13 Stone Runner, which sounds pretty epic. So thank you so much for your continued support. So, halflings, this week we are looking at some classes. We thought we would do some deep dives onto how some classes work from both a sort of technical kind of min-maxy point of view and from a role-playing point of view. So, this week we thought we would start with, where everyone starts or seems to start, rogues.
Okay, well, it would be best to kind of list some of the features, the basic features for the rogue, just so you guys know. So the rogue, it is primarily a martial class. It gets a D8 for its hit die, meaning that depending on whether you roll for XP or you use like the average XP, you're drawing from a D8, which is like a decent size, but smaller than most of the other martial classes like fighter or paladin or ranger or barbarian, but all of which get either D10s or D12s. The rogue... Let's see, at level one, you are proficient in light armor. You're proficient with simple weapons, hand crossbows, long swords, rapiers, and short swords. You have a proficiency in thieves' tools. Your saving throws are dexterity and intelligence. And then you get to choose four skills from a list of acrobatics, athletics, deception, insight, intimidation, investigation, perception, performance, persuasion, sleight of hand, and stealth. Which is, I think, more than any other... I think, that is more than any other class.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else gets... Well, I think that's the point. They're honed and very skillful fighters. So,
exactly. They're meant to be good at stuff that's not just fighting, essentially. Also, at level one, you get expertise, which allows you to double your skill proficiency for two of your skills. The only other class that gets that, I think, is the... Bard, and they don't get it till like level three, I think. Yeah, level 2 or level 3.
Very good to start out with. Very useful. Because you can start getting some beefy rolls at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And I feel like at the beginning, when you're like level 1, if you're rolling above like 17, like you're probably going to like succeed. Like you've got a mean DM if you're failing on a 17 at level 1.
Unless you're trying to do something really outlandish.
Yeah, unless you're trying to do something ridiculous. Yeah.
Also at level 1, you get what is essentially the rogue's foundational ability, which is sneak attack.
Yeah.
We should explain this because this is a real point of confusion for a lot of people, how sneak attack actually works. So I'll read you the actual text. Beginning at first level, you know how to strike subtly and exploit a foe's distraction. Once per turn, you can deal an extra 1d6 damage to one creature you hit with an attack if you have advantage on the attack roll. The attack must use a finesse or a ranged weapon. Essentially, something that uses dexterity. Yes. That's what that means. You do not need advantage on the attack roll if another enemy of the target is within 5 feet of it, and that enemy is not incapacitated, and you don't have disadvantage on the attack roll. So basically, if one of your friends is next to the enemy, and the friend is conscious and not incapacitated, and you don't already have disadvantage on this roll, you can sneak attack.
Yes.
And the amount of extra damage increases as you gain levels in this class. Essentially, every other level, you gain an additional d6, maxing out, I think, at 10 d6 at level 19. So you could be slinging 10 d6 with an attack. However, this is a loophole that is official rule that most people do not realize. Most people think that a rogue can only sneak attack once per round. The language says once per turn, which means you can sneak attack as a reaction. As long as it is not your turn, you can sneak attack. So you can sneak attack on your turn, and then if a person tries to run away from you and you have the conditions necessary to sneak attack that person, you can sneak attack him again.
Whoa.
There's a battle master fighter ability where you can like tell your allies to attack again, I think, as a reaction.
Yes.
And
you
could use it there too.
Yeah. Wow, that's very good to know.
A max of twice per round, essentially.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of one of the things, one of the big pieces of advice, which I've started to realize, and I realized it after I played a Mastermind Rogue, actually, for the first time, which is use the help action. People, if you are a cleric or a bard or a druid or something, maybe you don't have a lot of spells left because you've used a lot of them. Maybe you have you've got a pretty useful bonus action, like a healing word or something like that, which you can use, but you're a bit stuck on what to do for your main action. If you can justify a reason to give the help action to your rogue, you can give them advantage, which means you can give that person, that rogue, not only advantage to hit, but then also their sneak attack damage, regardless of what situation the enemy's in, and that will make a huge difference. And that could turn the tide.
Yeah.
Like if you're like around a level 6 or 7, that rogue's getting what, like a extra
3 or 4 d6
of damage. Like that's a big chunk of change. Do you know what I mean? Plus they've got advantage, so they've got a decent chance to crit as well. So it's well worth considering. If you don't have anything major that you can do on your turn, find a way, like find something inventive that you can do, like throw a rock at the enemy, distract them, whatever it is, you know, come up with some shenanigans, and just be like to your DM, like, I'm giving the help action.
Yeah.
And I mean, on a technical level, I think as long as you don't come up with something ludicrous, there's not much the DM can say.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's just a part of the rules that you can give the help action as an action. So, like, you can just say, I'm helping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm helping.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's... I can't remember what subclass it is. I don't remember if it's a rogue subclass or if it's something else, where you can help as a bonus action as well.
The rogue mastermind. This is why I thought about it is because the rogue mastermind as their bonus action can give the help action, which is so useful because if you're attacking at range, you don't want to use your two weapon fighting, you don't need to use your two weapon fighting, whatever, you can give advantage to someone else or you can give them disadvantage. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do with it. Give help action, folks. You've got to think about it on a pure hit point, a pure dice basis, which is that you can only do a maximum of like 1d4 or 1d6 of damage, and your rogue can do 3d6 of damage on a hit, then it just, action economy works so much better if that rogue hits than you hit.
Yeah. Also at level 1, you get Thieves' Cant, which I have almost never seen used. But
which really upsets me.
That's really campaign dependent. It's campaign dependent.
Yeah.
Because it's not bad. It's just like, most of the time I never see. Like, you, you're just not around a bunch of thieves in most of the campaigns that I either run or play in. but it could be useful.
Yeah, like, if you find, because it's also, because Thieves' Cant is a spoken language, but also a written language of symbols, right? So, like, you don't necessarily need to be surrounded by a bunch of thieves. You can just litter it in your world, and your rogue is the only one who can decipher it. So, like, I think people should use it more because it's fun.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Nati, on this one. It's really, really fun. And not only that, like, it gives you the option, I always think, to, like, wheedle out people. Like, you know, like, I always think, like, throw some thieves' cant out whilst you're stood in the middle of the bar and then ask the DM if you spot anyone reacting.
Yeah.
To, like, what you've said. Do you know what I mean? Because then you're going to know, like, ah, okay, there's potentially an ally or whoever we're looking for. Do you know what I mean? I see you. Let's play this game.
To explain, because we didn't exactly say what thieves' cant is, basically, it's a it allows you to basically insert a bunch of code words into your conversation to convey a message to somebody who else who knows it. It takes four times longer to convey such a message. But essentially, it's like if I'm, it's like if I was encoding a message right now into what I was saying, and only the people who spoke thieves' cant could understand it, it would explain why I talk for so long. And there's also
me and Jeremy are just talking in thieves' cant the whole time.
Yes,
it's why we ramble so much.
We're communicating to sleeper cell agents around the globe.
The podcast is a front, guys.
Yes, there's also at level, and that's all at level one, which, by the way, is why so many people like to multi-class into rogue, because that gives you good stuff at level one. And then at level two, I think you gain the ability to really play the rogue the way it's mechanically meant to be played in most cases, which is at level two, you get cunning action, which allows you to take the dash, disengage, or hide action as a bonus action. And that's where we get into the crux of the rogue is not really built to stand and slug it out with somebody. You don't have the armor for it. You don't have the health for it. You run in, you stab them, you bonus out. Action disengage, and you run
and
away.
And you get out.
Or if you're a swashbuckler, you, as we'll find out, you just run in, stab them, and then you can just run away and hide.
And do whatever the hell you want, basically, if you're a swashbuckler. It just doesn't matter.
Or if you're a lot of ranged rogues, you hide, pop out, shoot them, and then hide again.
And hide again.
And giving yourself advantage. That's, after that, you gain the archetype and... the last two big abilities, because most people don't play to higher levels, and I won't go through everything that you get, but at level five, you get Uncanny Dodge, which is a great ability.
Remember Uncanny Dodge, people. The amount of times I, as a DM, have to remind my rogues that they have Uncanny Dodge. It's so... You just get to half a damage. Like, if you know the big boss is going to hit you this round, just whatever the DM says, just like, yep, Uncanny Dodge. Just half the damage. Just half it'll save a life.
It's when an attacker that you can see hits you with an attack, you can use your reaction to cut that damage in half against
it's
you.
It's so crazy.
It's really good. And then at level seven, the other really annoying thing that DMs are like, you gotta be kidding me. Basically, it gives, when you are subjected to an effect that allows you to make a dexterity saving throw to only take half damage, fireball, for example, you instead take no damage if you succeed on the saving throw, and only half damage if you fail. You basically resist all dex save spells. Or effects,
and like,
actually.
And if you're a rogue, you've probably got, you know, a plus two minimum, maybe a plus, you know, three or four. You're probably going
to
save.
To a dex save. You're proficient.
That's what I mean. I'm just saying, as in to your just straight dex. So as in for an actual saving throw, it'd be even higher. Do you know what I mean? So you've got like a solidly, I reckon, a over 50% chance of just taking no damage from any kind of AoE effect like that requires dex. Like it's crazy. It's so crazy.
Rogues also get 6 ability score improvements. Thought I would throw that out there. Not every class gets that many. They get them at 4th level, 8th level, 10th level, 12th level, 16th level, and 19th level, where you can either increase an your ability scores or choose a feat. You get that 6 times.
And there are some very good feats as well, which I think we'll definitely get into, but there's some very, very useful feats mechanically as well.
To interpret all of that, rogues are supposed to be dexterous. If you are playing a low dexterity rogue, that's fine if you're trying to do it from like a roleplay perspective, but it's important to know that you will be mechanically like making your character worse. Yeah. So like in terms of trying to do things, they will just be bad at things. compared to like what they would normally be good at. Maybe they would be bad at like combat. If you want to build somebody who's just bad at combat, just be aware that that's what the rogue runs on. The single most important ability score for a rogue mechanically, at least the way the class is built, is dexterity. Yes. So absolutely. As far as races go, if you're not using the optional Tasha's rules, anything, any race that gives you a +2 boost to dexterity is going to be a good race to play with a rogue.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
With my little tabaxis.
You get a climbing speed with a tabaxi as well, which is really good.
Yeah.
Starting with a climbing speed.
You're a sneaky cat. It's great.
Such a sneaky little cat.
Jasper, did you have some races that you wanted to throw out?
I did have some races I wanted to throw out. So I quite liked the Deep Gnome. Because the stone camouflage, basically if you're playing in any kind of like urban and or like mountainous setting, you get advantage on stealth rolls. 120 feet of dark vision could be super helpful for a rogue. It's only a +1 to dex, but I figure if you put whatever you roll in a decent category, like, you know, you can just put your highest one, still pretty useful. Also like undercommon, like I know it sounds like they get undercommon as like a standard language, like I always find if you're dealing with shady peoples as a rogue, then usually you'll come across undercommon, and it's always something that I go to
people constantly show up and shady stuff.
Yeah, literally. So like, I mean, like everyone be speaking undercommon, it seems, in most campaigns I play in, and I'm like, oh man, I really should have, damn, I should have taken undercommon.
Should have been a deep no.
And then if I'm not mistaken, they're small, right? Which means they can move.
Yes.
You can move through opponents that are
you can move through
allies.
I think it's maybe the Lightfoot halfling that can move through opponents.
But
I think all small creatures can move through a medium-sized ally.
Awesome.
Can move through their space.
Awesome. And then I had one more, sort of really big one, which I kind of just found today when I was doing a bit of research, which is Arakokra. That is so well built for a rogue. It is kind of outrageous. If you want to play a snipey rogue that is just going to get yourself that sharpshooter feat and get yourself some distance away from your target, I don't know how you would take that Arakokra. As a DM, that is my nightmare. Like, that makes me feel
anxious. At low levels,
it's
an absolute nightmare. At high levels, thankfully, you can start being like, Earthbind! A dragon! They brought a dragon!
Sure, right?
Or your party has gotten a lot of notoriety. So now people have started, packing, a lot of ranged attacks. You just could be blasting.
Yeah. But, I mean, even so, a flying speed of 50 feet... Like, that's seriously
quick. Especially with a rogue.
You
that's
know,
the crazy
so...
thing. With a rogue, you can dash as a bonus action and as an action and fly 150 feet in a single turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even you
it's
could go
nuts.
In, attack, and clear 100 feet. You could get 100 feet away from your target. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's so insane.
It's... truly redonkulous.
Yeah, plus also then obviously you get a +2 to your dex, which is great, which is exactly what you want.
And a +1 to wisdom, which is very
wisdom.
Good for the rogue. I think you'll find, depending on the subclass you pick, the secondary abilities for the rogue are either going to be a wisdom, intelligence, or charisma.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why sometimes a tiefling be fun or a changeling be fun.
Changelings.
I mean, changelings.
A changeling, if you're playing a charisma-based rogue, a changeling is an absolute nightmare. Like an assassin or something. Like, that's just a joke.
Yeah, if you're playing an assassin, then a changeling is the obvious one to go for. I don't feel like I see it that often, and I feel like it's partly because people feel like it's almost a bit unfair. Do you know what I mean? I feel like I'd go to make one and be like, this feels like a little too broken, because I can effectively wander into mostly anywhere with if I have a decent enough deception. Yeah. At most levels, I'm going to be able to go wherever I want pretty much undetected. Yeah. And then if I attack out of the blue and get surprised, I'm critting.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
For effect, tieflings are fun if you want to go full dark and broody. all the way dark and broody. Just give them horns and a tail.
I feel like they work really, they work really well for like a charisma based rogue, and also just like the characterization.
I really wanted to throw this out because this is in tandem with the roguish archetype that I will be talking about later, which is the Reborn. One of the UAs, because we've been talking about loads recently, so it's been in my mind. But ability score increases, you get to choose, so that's super helpful. So you can do that +2 to dex, and then you can obviously put the one somewhere else. But then you also get you get dark vision. You get advantage, I do believe, on death saving throws. Which as a low hit point rogue is probably going to be quite useful because you're likely to go down on occasion. You don't need to breathe. Could be useful if you're trying to sneak up on things like swimming, things like that. You don't need to sleep. Magic can't put you to sleep. You only need to spend 4 hours inactive in a motionless state, which means you're unlikely to get snuck up on then as well, if you're sort of dealing in those circles. And then this I thought was actually really, really useful for a rogue, which is the knowledge of the past life feature, which allows you to add the D6 to a check. And I thought actually, and I think you get that equal to, so you get to use that equal to your proficiency. So if you're anywhere mid-level, you're getting 3 or 4 uses of this, and basically you can give yourself like a bardic inspiration die. But I'm talking like if you've got a big deception or a big stealth roll to make, that D6 could really come in handy. And I just think, and also, you know, hey, again, if you want to go dark and broody, if you want to go down that route, but like really go down that route, I mean, what's better than, you know, you're effectively some sort of, I mean, I quite like the idea of maybe making them a bit ghosty, you know, with the nature of them. But yeah, I think that would be super helpful.
And actually, I just found out this, I think it was last night, the upcoming Strahd book that's getting released, the Ravenloft, is going to have the Reborn as an official lineage. It's going to be, it's already going to be made official.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Woo-hoo. Very cool.
So you'll get to
play
them.
Very cool. I really, really like the Reborn. I think it's grown on me as the I think it's my favorite of the three now. Just because I love that knowledge of the past life. I think it's a really useful feat and a really fun roleplay feat as well. Really, really fun roleplay feat.
It's very cool. Another one. I was going to list some more. The elf. All of the elf varieties are very, elves, very good. Yeah. Halflings, a lot of people will tell you halflings are kind of the quintessential rogue. Like the light, the lightfoot halfling in many ways is the quintessential, especially with lucky, is so good where you get to reroll ones. And then it's halfling so nimbleness. Oh, it may actually be all halflings. It's not just lightfoot halflings. I think lightfoot halflings can hide behind other characters. But any halfling can run through the space of any character. And also ghostwise halflings with their silent speech can be very useful for infiltrating places and speaking telepathically. And of course, halflings get the +2 bonus. Satyr could be fun if you're doing a charisma-based rogue. They get a +2 to charisma and a +1 to dexterity. We already talked about Aarakocra being absolutely broken. Bugbear gets a +1 to dexterity. And bugbears get an ability where if you surprise somebody and you hit them, you get an additional 2d6. So it's already kind of in that, it's called sneaky. It's called, I think, sneaky or surprise attack, but they're built to be like sneaky, sneaking up on people. So they get additional bonuses to all of that.
That's a lot of d6,
wow,
yo.
Yeah. So a bugbear assassin, for instance, that's just if you hit somebody who's surprised, you auto crit. You're automatically rolling an additional 4d6 into whatever it was you were going to roll.
Jeez.
Which is wild. Goblins, really good.
Yep, goblins.
Goblins are really, really good. Kenku, especially with their ability to imitate, great for infiltration. All of these things that I'm listing get a +2 to dex. Kobolds, shout out to the kobold. Their pack tactics is absolutely broken when put with a rogue.
Does that give you advantage if you're
advantage. It gives you advantage on the attack if one of your allies is within 5 feet of the opponent.
Okay. So you're going to hit and you're going to get sneak attack.
Yeah. It makes it incredibly easy to get sneak attack, and it makes it incredibly easy to hit with sneak attack.
That's really helpful.
Very useful.
I had two kind of left field choices, which I would probably recommend, you know, you ask your DM and you use the Tasha's like optional features for these, but Earth Genasi, purely on the basis that you get the Pass Without Trace spell that you can use once per long rest. That's a plus 10 to stealth. I mean, yeah. That's so friggin' helpful. And I definitely think you could make that work. And also, you don't then have any issues with difficult terrain, which, again, if you're trying to get there away from something in a pinch, then that could be useful.
Pass Without Trace gives you a plus 10
to stealth.
So you're going to
disappear.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, that's so broken.
It's like with that thing when they're like, oh yeah, your player's like, oh, I rolled like a 30, and you're like, I mean, I as the DM don't know where you are.
I think in one of the most recent episodes of Critical Role, Sam's character rolled like a 43.
Because
I think she rolled really high. She gets like a plus 10, and then also gets like a natural plus 10 to stealth, and then got an additional plus 10 to stealth.
That's so insane. Like, that's so insane.
I think she was also blessed or something. And then I didn't actually mention this earlier, but at level 11, you do get an ability called Reliable Talent whenever you make an ability check with an ability that you are proficient in, like a skill that you are proficient in, you can treat a roll of 9 or lower on the D20 as a 10, which means if you don't want to, you cannot roll below a natural 10 on anything you are proficient in. And if you have expertise in something, like say stealth, and you at level
easily
and you,
a plus 10.
By level 11, if you're building like with a dexterity build, you should probably have maxed dex. Yeah. So that's like a 5, and I think at that level you get a 4 as your proficiency bonus. That's 5 plus 8 is 13. You cannot roll below a 23 on stealth unless you want to. Starting at level 11, just absolutely broken.
Which is so ridiculous. You're not going to be seen. You're just not going to be seen. The last, again, one, you probably have to use the optional feature, but Fearbolg, just because, again, they have the ability to disappear. Yeah, they can turn invisible. Which, despite their size, I think still be hella useful.
It would be really cool.
plus also, the general perception of Fearbolgs seems to be that they're very trustworthy. So I feel like you could play that as a roleplay thing if you wanted to be, a sneaky bit of a, you know, a less kindly Fearbolg. I think you could use that to your advantage. Just throw that out there.
Yeah, and also if you're like in like a woodland scenario, Fearbolgs can talk to animals.
Yeah,
it's like small animals. And so, like, maybe you have, like, your little animal friends that you've marshaled to your forces. Also, I want to throw out the Grung. Also, good.
The Grung
gets a plus 2 to dex, but it's the poison skin that really where it goes nuts. Basically, as a Grung, your skin is toxic, so anyone who touches you, if they're not immune to poison, has to make a constitution saving throw. I think it's a DC 12. Poisonous skin, or they become poisoned for 1 minute. But you can also apply that poison to any piercing weapon as part of an attack with that weapon. So when you hit somebody with a weapon that's poisoned, they have to make a DC 12 con save or take 2d4 poison damage. Now at higher levels, most people are going to make that save, but if they don't, if every single attack you land does it, eventually they're going to fail. Yeah. And that's an adult. It's another 2d4.
And as a rogue, like, that's kind of your thing. Like, your attacks tend to hit because you'll have, you'll have high dex.
Mm-hmm.
An advantage a lot of the time. You're like very likely to hit. And then law of averages that they're going to fail a fair amount of the time.
Yeah. Rogues, I think it's best to emphasize the way that the class is designed. Rogues are supposed to be a slightly more strategic class than, say, a fighter, where a lot of times you can just kind of run in and start swinging. A rogue is supposed to be that whole sneaky, conniving, cunning thing that they really built that into the class itself. Yeah. So you should be able to, with your abilities, hopefully get advantage on a lot of your attacks, like Jasper was saying, and hit a really high percentage of the time, which is important because rogues never get extra attack. In yes. contrast to, I think, every other martial class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
and it's
never
important
get extra
that's
attack.
The case, because rogues would start to get a little silly, I think, if they started yeah. getting extra attacks. Because
like,
if you had poison weapons and all sorts, it would get dumb.
That's also why multi-classing like rogue into barbarian or rogue into fighter
I know, yeah, I always do rogue
can
fighter.
Just be really good.
Like, I always do rogue fighter.
Yeah, that's, that action yeah. surge.
It's really useful.
Yeah. Or barbarian, you just go into a rage and you resist the damage and give yourself it. You can reckless attack and give yourself advantage in every attack, and their advantage against you doesn't matter because you've bonus action disengaged and run away.
Yeah. I will say this as well about the rogue, which I think people often don't think about and might be a useful either roleplay element for you and a mechanical element, which is that you are a hyper mobile class most of the time mm-hmm. with your ability to dash as a bonus action. This also means you could be a pretty good support class or like some support elements. If you've got a downed ally, you've got, you know, give your rogue the health potions when you enter a battle, because your rogue can get about the field without getting, you know, like they can disengage so that they don't get attacks opportunity. They can dash, like Jeremy was saying. You can effectively use, you know, two dashes in a turn if you needed to. So, you know, you're going to be able to clear most battlefields like in a turn as a rogue. So there's a lot of useful things, you know, like a lot of useful elements like that.
I'm actually going to touch on that later with the class, Ooh. The subclass that I'm going to talk about in this episode. Some of that support element.
Why don't we go ahead and talk about our subclasses then, our roguish archetypes?
Ooh, okay.
Maybe Yunasi, do you want to tell us about which one you've picked out as one of your faves?
One of my faves is Assassin.
Ooh, yeah.
Just because Assassin's, I mean, it's in the name, right?
It's
what book is that? Where can folks find this particular rogue?
You can find this archetype in the Player's Handbook.
So it is, it's the original, it's one of the original rogues that were published
yeah.
for 5th edition.
Yeah. It's a classic because you find it all over literature and media and, you know, the assassin, right? They're in everything.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of my favorite. And with the abilities, it's really great.
What are some of those abilities?
Yeah. So you get bonus proficiencies at around like third level. And you can get first of all, you get the disguises kit and the poisonous kit, which, you know, for an assassin is useful.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, if you were like a changeling assassin, that would also be crazy, because why would you even need a disguise kit anymore?
Especially with their higher level abilities, like the assassin gets, it's like that's a match made in heaven. Or hell, you're the DM.
But poison is so underused, though. I just want to like point this out, because there is literally like a poison you can get which looks and smells exactly the same as a healing potion, but does something like 4 or 5d6 of poison damage on a, and then if you fail your con save, you take like an extra like 2d6 for every like 10 minutes or something that you basically aren't healed. It's like so like, and like poisons like this are like all over the place. There's even worse ones that you can do. So if you have a poisoners kit, use it. Find out some of these poisons and use them, because damn, you could really mess someone up. Mess someone up.
I always forget about that. So at third level, essentially it's about like getting the drop on your enemies. So if you get that sneak attack in, you kind of become like uber deadly. You get your, and that's the ability, you get assassinate at third level.
Is that, it turns everything into a crit if you hit?
When they're surprised? Yeah, I'll read it. Starting at third level, you are at your deadliest when you get the drop on your enemies. You have advantage on attack rolls against any creature that hasn't taken a turn in combat yet. In addition, any hit you score against a creature that is surprised is a crit. I mean, like,
it's where that bugbear comes in.
It's really rude.
Yeah,
it's where that bugbear comes.
Yeah.
Oh my word. Yeah. If you're, that's so much.
Yeah.
Is that an extra 2d6 you get for the bugbear?
Yeah. And if you crit, then it's an extra 4d6. Bro, so a level 19 bugbear can be tossing up 24d6.
That's insane.
That's oh, wait, insane. But it's even worse, because I forgot they have higher level, assassins have higher level abilities. It's still, it's absolutely preposterous.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Which brings me to my next one. So because you're like an assassin, obviously you need to infiltrate things loads, right? Like you need to get past guards unnoticed or go through...
Into that cool party.
Yeah, into that cool party or, you know, like get through the military barracks unrecognized. So you get at ninth level, you get infiltration expertise where you can unfailingly create false identities for yourself. Which takes you spend 7 days and 25 GP to establish their history, profession, affiliations for the identity. You can't establish an identity that belongs to someone else. It has to be a completely new identity. That's kind of wild. You can keep using this identity as a disguise. Other creatures believe you to be that person until given an obvious reason not to.
That's where the wild. I mean, even
really comes and, in.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Would you? I might waive a lot of that. Honestly, yeah, because changelings have that ability to create other personas anyway, don't they?
Yeah, they already like that's kind of like intrinsically built in.
I might waive the cost at that point because it's what are you spending on makeup?
Exactly. you don't really kind of need that, and that can be fun for role play. And I suppose like when you're picking your race, then you kind of have to. When I sort of pick a race for a rogue, or I'm building a rogue, even though on D&D Beyond you only get these things a bit later, I always consider what I'm going to do about the archetype, even if I'm playing from level one, just because otherwise problems. Where like you're like, oh, I was playing this kind of rogue the whole time, but actually I'm a bit more talky in my role play.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, actually, especially because if you're going to, like, again, if you start pumping loads into, like, wisdom or something, and then you pick, like, arcane trickster or something like that, then you want to be hitting that intelligence early. So, exactly.
You're like, I have a 9 intelligence.
That's not going to be so great.
Then at level 13, you get imposter. You gain the ability to unerringly mimic another person's speech, writing, and behavior. You must spend at least 3 hours studying these three components of the person's behavior, listening to speech, examining handwriting, and observing mannerisms. Your ruse is indiscernible to the casual observer. If a wary creature suspects something is amiss, you have advantage on any charisma deception check you make to avoid detection. What do you mean?
It's basically like the actor feat.
Yeah,
it's like a free version. It takes a little longer, but it's very similar to the actor feat.
Yeah,
and then you couple that with infiltration expertise, and you kind of go, well, I feel like as a DM, I'm gonna need this rogue to do something super chaotic, otherwise I can't feasibly say any of these NPCs are going to notice that you're like, because that's just like, you're going to need to be really sticking out or like somewhere you really shouldn't be or something, because otherwise there's just no reason. It's written into the rules of the thing. It's like you unfailingly, like it's literally, when you start throwing away that around that kind of word, it's like, well, okay, there's not much I can do here.
Imagine a changeling rogue who just straight kills people and replaces them. Because you can literally turn into that person.
Yeah. Undetectable. Yeah. Would never if be you, found.
If you interact with them for 3 hours, at least 3 hours, you can then just take them out, or even just watch them for 3 hours. You can then take them out. Like, imagine it's a preacher or like a priest. You go to a church service. The dude talks for a long time. That's it.
That's it.
Like, should have closed sooner, bud.
Done.
Because once he hits that 3 hours, that's it. You could just kill them and replace them. Yeah. That is, that's redonk.
Pretty, pretty wild. And then finally, my favorite, although I've never gotten this far yet, I hope to one day, is Death Strike at level 17. You become a master of instant death. What does that even mean? When you attack...
As opposed to slow death, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there's the way of the long death in the monk, so...
Yeah, sorry, that was just
there must be also a short death.
A quickened death. When you attack and hit a creature that is surprised, it must make a constitution saving throw, DC 8 plus your dex modifier and your proficiency bonus. On a failed save, double the damage of your attack against the creature. What is that?
So that's basically like a double crit, because you're already critting if you're an assassin. Yeah. So if they're surprised.
What is that?
So
That bugbear.
At level
man.
17, your proficiency as well is then going to be. Hold on, I'm trying to work out roughly
level
what 17, that would be.
I think it's going to be
six.
Six
plus
yeah.
six. So you're looking at 14 plus. You've probably got max now by this point. So you're looking at a DC 19.
Yeah.
Realistically, a DC 19, maybe 18. To not get a to get double critted, which is going to be like just so many d6s,
and feels that's so
gonna
be, great to roll.
That's going to be that, wait, hold on. That's going to be.
I think it's going to be
no.
9d6 at that level for a regular sneak attack, which gets doubled.
So then
to
a
18.
Crit, 18, but then you're doubling the damage.
Yeah. So that you double,
so you
rolled
18
d6 and then double the damage from that.
Oh my goodness. And that's if you don't have, yeah, that's then if you don't have any other features, you know, special weapons, items, poisons.
That's on average, I think, 108 damage. And that's not counting the damage from the weapon. And that's if you're not a bugbear. Because the bugbear is another 46 on top of that.
Another 46 on top.
I'm really riding this bugbear.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm so with you.
Yeah.
What? Okay, this is what's even more wild, though. Say you're the Arakokra, right? You could then be just like 200 feet away yeah. from your target.
You have sharpshooter.
And do 100 points of damage.
And that's just like, I just realized if you have sharpshooter, the 10 gets doubled. Because
yeah,
double
yeah.
the
so
damage, not double the damage dice.
Yeah, so you take a minus 5 to hit, and you'd get a plus 20 to the damage. It's so broken.
And at level 17, you should be getting like a plus 10 or 11 to hit anyway.
Yeah.
So, and you, if you're hitting from like 200
and
feet away,
advantage.
You have advantage on this attack because they're not going to know you're there. So you just snipe somebody, and that's it.
You might have just, as a DM, you might just have to sort of like just be like, yeah, a full long range sniper rifle appears in your hand.
And then it's the poison. Like the poison damage gets doubled too. If you
have,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
yeah, so if you
no.
dip the arrow in some poison,
yeah,
yep,
oh,
yep, yep. Yep, it's a fun time. It's a
monstrous.
Fun time. One day,
that
one
is
day I'll get to the
absolutely monstrous.
Deck.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Assassin is really, really, really good, I think, as a multi-class option. I've seen it doubled, actually two notable examples. One, an example from a guest character on NADPOD, played by Brennan Lee Mulligan, was, I won't say names because Jasper's listening to the show, so I won't spoil who it is.
Thank
but
you.
The essentially, this character was multi-classed assassin rogue plus another high damage subclass of a different class. And absolutely, man, I think his first initiative roll was a 30.
Wow.
And it
Jesus.
Was just, I didn't actually listen to this, but I think my friend listened to it and she said that Murph was saying that like, it was, he just completely crushed the encounters. Like these were supposed to be really hard encounters, mm-hmm. and this dude just comes in here and just, and that's it. I'm just like, yeah. wow.
I think.
And the other example
Nazi...
is.
Oh no, sorry. You go
the other example is played by Ali Beardsley in A Crown of Candy.
Mm-hmm.
I will also not spoil what happened there and what that multi-class was with, but the assassin rogue did work. Did some work. In that campaign. Really,
I've got to be honest, Yonati, you've really like sold me this, because I think actually what the assassin subclass gives you is a really nice blend between hardcore and very effective, like numbers based, you know, output. You know, you can really carry your own in a party, but plus with some really, really fun roleplay options.
Yeah, so
like
many
really
fun
roleplay options.
You can,
like
yeah.
past level 9, you are having a ball.
Great time.
You were having a ball, like
great.
If you've got enough time to prepare, never give your players time to prepare, guys. Never give your players time to
prepare. That's what I will say. That would be my criticism of why I've never wanted to really play this class that much, is because it's all hinging on surprise. And you don't normally get surprise in most encounters. I feel like in most D&D games I've been a part of, the party is more likely to be surprised than the enemies are. Sometimes you get the drop on them. Sometimes you do.
Sure.
And when you get that, the assassin is unstoppable. But if you compared to some of the other rogues, I think the assassin is very, very situational. So if you have a campaign that allows a large amount of RP and a large amount of like intrigue, and based so that you can just sneak in places and get the drop on people and stuff, the assassin is an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
But I don't know, a dungeon crawl, you might have a harder time.
Yeah.
Or if it's like you're up against the big bad guy and they know you're coming.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Tell me this actually, Jeremy, because I'm not sure. How would surprise work? Like, as in, if the enemy is in combat, but like they don't know that you're there.
Doesn't matter. Would they then be surprised? No, you cannot surprise someone if they're in combat. Yeah. You have to surprise is a condition. So a lot of people will do it because I think in past editions of D&D, you could get like a surprise round. And some people still do that. That is not part of the official rules for 5th edition. So you can do it, but it's not in the rules. The rules are that if a person is surprised, I believe that they cannot take actions or reactions while they are surprised.
Right.
But I think after that round, let me see here. I'm going to look it up, actually, so we can find the exact language so that I don't mislead anybody. But I know
they effectively get a bonus action. So you still roll initiative as you would normally do. They get like a bonus action.
The GM determines who might be surprised. If neither side tries to be stealthy, they automatically notice each other. Otherwise, the GM compares the stealth checks of anyone hiding with the passive perception score of each creature on the opposing side. Any character or monster that doesn't notice a threat is surprised at the start of the encounter. If you're surprised, you can't move or take an action on your first turn of the combat, and you can't take a reaction until that turn ends. A member of a group can be surprised even if the other members aren't. So what that essentially means is it has to be in the first round of combat, and it's not a surprise round necessarily against every other person, but it could be if they're all surprised. Like if you surprise the entire group of bandits, now it's like, well, you guys just get to pile on your attacks for a round. But essentially it just means you're just like, huh, and just getting lit up by a bunch of people.
Getting Boromir.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Or Sonny Corleone. In fact, that's a great example of a character who was surprised.
Yeah, a surprise.
Yes. Godfather. Go watch that scene. Great example of what happens to a character who's surprised. Mine is another subclass that can be found in the player's handbook, and it is in fact the name that the rogue used to be known by, as I understand it, in previous editions, like earliest editions of the game. The rogue was actually called the thief. The thief at level 3 gets an ability called Fast Hands, which means that you can use a bonus action, the bonus action granted by your cunning action, to make a sleight of hand check. Use your thieves' tools to disarm a trap or open a lock, or take the use an object action. And that's where I was going to get to the support aspect of this. The sleight of hand thing is useful if you're in a campaign that counts ability checks as actions, because that's what the rules are. But most of the campaigns that I've played in, and in fact the ones I run, usually will either just let you do them, like let you make ability checks, or they'll make you use like a bonus action. They don't usually count it as a full action. But if you're in a campaign that would count it as a full action, absolutely. But here's the thing, almost every campaign I've ever played with counts using a potion as an action.
This
fellow gains the ability to use that as a bonus action either on themselves or on a fallen ally, which I have done on several occasions. I remember one fight in particular in which two allies had gone down, and I just ran in double fisting these potions and was just like pouring them down unconscious people's throats, like, here we go, gotta bring people back up.
I'm out here being a cleric. I'm out here clericking.
and even if it's like, oh no, I got hurt, I can hand you a potion, or you got hurt, I can hand you a potion, or I got hurt, I can down a potion and then stab this guy.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
In a pinch.
And I would actually, as a DM, I think I would probably rule that you could do more environmental stuff as well. Like, I'd probably say, like, yeah, hell yeah, you can, you know, unhinge the big chandelier above the thing as a bonus action or
slide
something. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, just like untie something or cut something, or do you know what I mean? Like, more environmental things like that could be super useful as a bonus action.
100%. You also get at level 3 second story work, which gives you a climbing speed, essentially. Climbing no longer costs you extra movement. And in addition, when you make a running jump, the distance you cover increases by a number of feet equal to your dex modifier, which is really good. It's really good.
Useful.
Especially if you have like a strong dex score early on, you can start, like, even if you're using standard array, but if you have something that gives you a +2, you can start out, I think, with like a +3 or +4. I think a +4 to dex, and just you're hopping an additional 4 feet into the air or across.
Yeah, that's quite a distance.
Yeah. Then those are basically, the climbing ability is again a little iffy. That's situational, because I know some DMs who like always demand athletics checks to climb things.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Which is not technically what the rules say. The rules, I mean, you can do it that way, but the rules, I think, are supposed to suggest that you should perhaps call for an athletics check if it's like something hard, but it's usually not that hard to climb a ladder, for instance.
Yes.
Or like, hard to climb a tree. And the problem with the athletics check is that rogues don't usually have great strength scores, so they're usually not going to be great at athletics, which means that this ability is absolutely useless. Although some games and some DMs will rule that having a climbing speed essentially negates the need to... and by the way, to clarify, most characters, when they climb, their speed is halved. They're walking; they can climb a distance equal to half their walking speed unless they have a climbing speed. So most characters can only climb about 15 feet. Whereas you can, thief can climb maybe 30 feet, depending on what race you're playing.
If
Tabaxi, you can either use the Tabaxi's natural ability that lets it climb 20 feet, or you can go a full 30. And they also have feline agility, which means you can like double your speed, right?
Yes. So you can double your speed in a turn,
climb up
and then
full 60 feet. Bonus action dash. Climb up another 60 feet.
Action dash.
Yeah, and an action dash. You have just climbed 180 feet in six seconds. Which I saw.
It's the
speed of a bike. Somebody riding a bike at a decent pace. You're just,
ridiculous.
Just sprinting up a wall.
You're basically Neo-ing up the side of a building.
Yeah.
That's what I'm picturing in my head. Just
it's Sonic the Hedgehog. It's like a four-legged It's Sonic the Hedgehog. So if a DM is willing to not make you roll athletics checks for every single attempt to climb something, second story work can be very, very useful. Especially if it's like, oh, we need to infiltrate this building. hey, I can climb up. I can be your monkey guy who just climbs up the wall and sneaks in.
I would always say there's a case to be made for an acrobatics check. Just ask your DM. Just say, can I use acrobatics instead? Because I feel like that's more fair. If you're a dex-based rogue, I just don't know why you would pure Hulk just like doing pull-ups to try and get your way. Yeah, like it just seems makes no sense. You'd use like momentum. You'd swing like across from one ledge to another. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't see why you wouldn't be able to use acrobatics. Like I would absolutely say acrobatics or athletics, whatever's better for you. That's how I'd rule it.
I think it's like you're an
whatever
acrobat.
Style you'd use.
Like acrobats are very, very strong, but they're not like the same kind of strength as like a football player. Like the muscles are designed for different things. I feel like like a lineman in American football would run off of athletics, but somebody like a wide receiver or an acrobat would, or maybe a tennis player might run off of acrobatics, depending.
Well, I would argue though that even rock climbers, you're probably using a lot of like actual dexterity to like get into positions. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got to be incredibly flexible to like pin your legs in certain ways and get into certain holds, and then have the kind of ability to swing and control the swing. And I would say the controlling a swing like that's more acrobatics for me.
Just ask yourself how many when you see rock climbers, how many of those people look like bodybuilders? The answer is not very many.
Literally zero. The Rock would not be good at climbing a rock.
No,
he is the Rock. You climb him.
Yeah.
But people who climb the Rock, they're not bodybuilders.
Spider-Man, he's not a bodybuilder.
He's not a bodybuilder. That's all acrobatics, baby. Yeah. That's all acrobatics.
Very good point. Then there's Supreme Sneak at level 9, which gives you advantage on a stealth check if you move no more than half your speed on the same turn. Pretty good. At level 13, I haven't gotten to use this one yet. Use magic device. You can basically ignore all class, race, and level requirements on the use of magic items.
What?
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Does that include weapons?
If the weapon does not require attunement, yeah.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Any
magic item that does not require attunement, you can now just use.
So you could use... Yeah, there's so many things.
And honestly, even if it does require attunement, you can attune to it.
Yeah.
You can now attune to it. But I'm thinking more like in a pinch, like, oh, the big bad dropped their magic staff. Well, great. Now I'm just going to pick it up and start casting crazy 7th level spells with it.
Oh, look, I found this scroll of, I don't know, teleportation.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm out.
Peace.
Holy. Yeah, peace. That's really good. Yeah, I did not know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like you can, it's like, I guess it's like that archetype in movies where it's like, I'm going to hotwire this car. I'm just going to fly this plane. I'm just going to figure out how to do all this stuff.
But I guess also the argument is like, if you have a base understanding at a certain level, then things do become then very accessible to you. If you're in and around a magical world and constantly dealing with magical items, you probably do get like a base understanding of like how to activate a magical item. You know, it can't be that different, right? On, up, whatever it is. Do you know what I mean?
And finally, level 17, you get Thieves' Reflexes. You can take 2 turns during the first round of any combat. You take your first turn at your normal initiative and your second turn at your initiative minus 10. You can't use this feature when you are surprised. So you could sneak attack 3 times in a round, theoretically, as this rogue.
Jeez. Do you know what I would want to do? Do you know what I genuinely would want to do? Would be like, I'd be like, okay, DM, can I like, for my first turn, can I push this like creature so that just so I can on my second turn dash round as they're still stumbling backwards and stab them again,
like, impale them
literally to give myself advantage on the second attack.
That would be amazing.
That's so good.
So thief, it's a solid thief. Subclass.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not unstoppable, but it's very good in a lot of ways. If you play it real strategically, and it's all about being resourceful and sneaky and all that stuff. All that classic rogue Bilbo Baggins stuff.
Yeah.
I have actually gone for one that is available in the Tasha's Cauldron book because I love it. I think it is so cool. And it's probably one of the roguish archetypes where I think I'm like, oh, that's real, like, fun and very different. I think it gives the rogue a bunch of very unique abilities, which I really like. So I've gone for Phantom. So the Phantom is like many rogues walk a fine line between life and death, risking their own lives and taking the lives of others. Whilst adventuring along that line, some rogues discover a mystical connection to death itself. I think it's really, really fun. And so at level 3, you get Whispers of Death, which is... echoes of those who have died cling to you. Whenever you finish a short or a long rest, you can choose one skill or tool with a proficiency that you lack and gain it. So basically you can choose either a short or a long rest to give yourself a proficiency in something else. So like if you know you're going into a certain... encounter, like you've got any kind of forethought for what you're about to do, you can just go ahead and give yourself a proficiency in something that you don't otherwise have, which I think is super helpful.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, forgery kits, poisonous kits, anything like, you know, any kits like that, even like forging or like metal, you know, stuff like that, you can just give yourself a proficiency. And I think this plays into one of the reasons why I really like the Phantom is that it's such a good roleplay class, because effectively you're talking to dead people. You're talking to people that you've killed, who are just like, oh, this is how you use a forgery kit. And so you've got like options for like imaginary friends effectively who just like hang around with you and like help you out with certain things that you do. And I just think that's really, really fun. You can basically just build I'm trying to think who. What is it? Sixth Sense. You could be the kid from Sixth Sense.
Cole is the name of the character.
Cole, yeah. Spoilers for Sixth Sense, I guess. Apologies.
It's
an old movie.
When Dr. Octopus took over Spider-Man's body with Superior Spider-Man, and Peter Parker's consciousness was still in there, like yelling at him. There you go. You now have Doc Ock just like using, just fully stripping Peter Parker's mind for all of his proficiencies. Like, oh, but this that's is what how I mean. You web sling.
Like, you can absolutely, yeah, that's what I mean. You can absolutely do stuff like that. And I think that's really, really fun. I guess it says it's a skill or tool. So the only thing you can't do is you can't gain proficiencies with weapons that you don't have proficiency in. That I think would be really quite broken.
Cool.
You
could effectively I'm now proficient with a greatsword.
Yeah, like, literally, you could just pick up any, and I'm going to do sneak attack damage with this greatsword.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. Just to be clear, it has to run on dex.
Yeah, it definitely has to run on dex.
I think we didn't say this, but the highest damage item that a rogue can get through normal means is a rapier, like at a base level, D8? Is a rapier. You're slinging D8s at that point.
But that's a single-handed, so you could two-handed as well. You could do two-weapon fighting, I think.
You couldn't use the ability two-weapon fighting, because that requires both weapons to be light melee weapons.
Ah, yes.
A lot of people don't understand that either, how two-weapon fighting works. They're supposed to be light melee weapons.
Clearly.
supposed to be, if you use the attack action and attack with one white light, excuse me, not a white, well, I mean...
well, you know.
Anyway, this is America. So you attack with one light melee weapon that you're holding in one hand. You can then use your bonus action to attack with another light melee weapon. And I think both of them have to... Yeah, I think they both have to be light. But
so which is like two daggers, for instance.
And that's not just a rogue-specific thing. That's like most martial... General, I think most classes get that, in fact.
It's just nice. So then at level 3 as well, you also get Wails of the Grave. As you nudge someone closer to death, you channel the power of death to harm someone else as well. So basically, immediately after you've made your sneak attack damage, you can then turn to another creature within a second target within 30 feet of the first creature you killed, and roll half the number of sneak attack dice. For your level, round it up, and the second creature takes that in necrotic damage, which I always think is super helpful because necrotic damage is barely ever resisted,
except by undead usually.
Yeah, so unless it's like an undead thing, like it's relatively usually resisted. And then, you know, it's just action economy. Like if you're damaging more things and maybe like leaving more things vulnerable, that's super helpful. And it gets even better when you get to your level 9 ability. Now, this is, I feel like, the only criticism I'd have of the Phantom is it takes a little minute to get into it. But once you get to level 9, things get really, really, really fun. So you get tokens of the departed. So when a life ends in your presence, you're able to snatch a token from the departing soul, a slither of its life essence that takes physical form. As a reaction, when a creature dies near you within 30 feet, you can open a free hand and cause a little trinket to appear there. This is a soul trinket. And the DM can basically decide how the trinket appears, or you can roll on the trinket table in the player's handbook. But basically, you can use the trinket in a multitude of ways. Basically you have a singular soul trinket, you have advantage on death saving throws and constitution saving throws. Like, that's
good.
Insanely helpful.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you then do sneak attack damage, you can destroy one of your soul trinkets that's on your person, and you can immediately use Wails of the Grave without expending a feature. And so I think Wails of the Grave, you can...
use equal to your proficiency bonus.
So you can use equal to your proficiency bonus. So and your maximum soul trinkets is also equal to your proficiency bonus. So you're effectively, you could use Wails of the Grave at level 9, what, like 8 times?
I think so.
Because your proficiency is +4.
Yeah.
So you could effectively use it 8 times. So
in
half your sneak
rest,
attack damage every single time. In a singular combat, you could do so much damage to multiple people.
That means
people
you can attack
then.
The minions and still hurt the big bad, or vice versa.
And probably take out a lot of those minions, to be honest. Like, free people up again. Like, if you use that strategically, you can free up a lot of your friends to be like, hey, come and attack this big bad with me. Do you know what I mean? For no real cost either. You know, you're burning through these trinkets, but like, you know, you then get them back if you kill someone.
Yeah, every time you kill a minion, you can get
a trinket back. And so this is honestly one of the dopest features. I love it. So as an action, you can destroy one of your soul trinkets no matter where it is located. When you do so, you can ask the spirit associated with the trinket one question. The spirit answers in a language known to you, and it's under no obligation to be truthful. And so basically, it's like a speak with dead.
Oh, well, no, it answers in a language it knew. It doesn't actually have to be a language that
life.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a fun complication.
Yeah.
Yes, true. Very true. But I feel like if you use this strategically, if you kind of plan ahead a little bit and think, okay, what do we need? Because also, how many times do you kill an NPC or a creature and go, God damn, we should have questioned it? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it happens so often. And I feel like this just immediately gives you like a get out of jail. Aha, we could ask them.
Let's bring them back and really hope they're not mad about the whole killing
thing.
We just killed. But I think because the thing is, even if you do, you know, if you've got someone with anywhere near decent insight, you ask them a question. If they straight up just lie or give you a false answer, roll insight, you'll at least know that's not the answer. Do you know what I mean? You're closer than you were.
Yeah, because it says it's no law, it's not under any obligation to be truthful and answers as concisely as possible. And it only knows what it knew in life as determined by the DM.
Yeah. And I think the answer as concisely as possible, kind of, then that's where it throws up for me. Like, well, they're probably going to be aiming to, they're not probably going to say no. I feel like that says to me, like, they need to answer the question. They just don't have to be truthful about it.
Yeah, they need to give you an answer.
So they need to give you an answer. They can't just like refuse or say no. Like, do you know what I mean?
Spirit, am I a jerk?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That would be a waste of it. Yeah! A waste of it. Yeah.
I'd like to roll insight.
I did actually see quite a cool homebrew thing where someone suggested splitting that feature up to basically mean that the Phantom isn't so like back heavy in terms of getting to level 9. I think they said like at level 6 give the first two soul trinket features and then save the kind of like speak with dead element till level 9. So just a potential little thing to throw out there if people feel like, I don't want to wait till like, because if you start at level 1, you are waiting a long time before you get into the real meat and, you know, meat and bones or whatever of the class.
Which, so and it seems like the tokens of the departed is the coolest thing in this subclass.
It's, well, I mean, the next one is also pretty cool.
That's true. It is very cool. This is very cool subclass, honestly.
It is so awesome. And then so at level 13, you get Ghost Walk. So at Ghost Walk, basically, you get a 10 feet flying speed. Everything has disadvantage on attacks against you, which is nuts. This thing lasts for 10 minutes, by the way. So, like, this is basically infinite in combat. Like, you're not going to... If a combat's gone on for 10 minutes, then the DM needs... You know what I mean? Like, you need to speed things up, yo. Like, 10 minutes, that's a lot of rounds. That's like 100 rounds?
That's
like
hundreds. It's 10 rounds per... It's 10 rounds per minute. So, yeah, it would be 100 minute. Rounds.
So, 100 rounds. So, yeah.
Nobody wants
that. It lasts a while. And basically, whilst you're in this form, you can pass through creatures, objects, difficult terrain, and you can...
You can cast them as if they were difficult terrain.
Yes. So basically, yeah. So you can pass through things as if they were difficult terrain. So you can basically phase through walls, up and down, through floors, etc. And the only sort of disadvantage is that it's only a 10 feet. You're actually hovering and you get a 10 feet of movement. But again, if you're a rogue, you've got bonus actions, like bonus action dash. So that automatically becomes 20 feet. Again.
And you could always walk.
Do you know what I mean?
Theoretically, you could always just run through a wall.
Yeah.
Or drop through the
exactly.
floor.
Or literally just drop
that
through the floor.
That is so
right, exactly.
You just drop through the floor, hover. No one can hit you if you're in a house. And you just float back up and attack.
Just literally, I think you literally described doing this to your players.
Yeah, you basically, you turn into a specter. It's monstrous.
Yeah. And again... if you like, I mean, you talk about surprise. I mean, geez, you just bump through the floor of like, if you know the one you need to get is in the bed above you, just whoosh, turn into your ghostly form and up
what
you
if
go.
You like you phase the weapon into them and then solidify it.
And then solidify.
Oh, like, it's just suddenly like a
it does say it does say
their chest.
It does say you take 1d10 of force damage if you start your turn inside a creature or an object. So, like, I mean, if you had a generous DM, you know, they might let you. I don't know.
It's worth it. It's worth the 1d10.
It's so worth it. Just to, like, I don't know. Yeah, that sounds like that would be so grim. Because surely the creature would have to take damage as well. Like, I feel like if you materialized or were inside of a creature.
Yeah, well, because you could still attack, right? Limitations 100%. On attacking. That's what's so wild.
And this is what's crazy, exactly, is the fact that they have disadvantage on attacks against you. There's literally no drawback to you just doing this before you go into combat. Like, obviously, you can only do this...
once per long rest, or you can use it. You can destroy a
you can use
soul
trinket.
Trinket.
You can drink it. So if you've got four trinkets, that's 40 minutes during a day that you could spend... Minimum.
I think at 13th level, you might even have
five or six.
I'm gonna check real quick.
So you're looking at a seriously
13th level, your proficiency bonus goes up to plus five.
So you could spend 50 minutes in effectively ghost form, taking disadvantage against all tax against you.
That's really good.
It's really good.
And you have a flying speed
it's
of 10 feet.
It's so cool.
It's so awesome. It's so awesome. And then finally, at 17th level, you get Death's Friend. So when you use your Wails of the Grave, you can now deal necrotic damage to both the first and the second target.
Mm.
So we were talking about stacking those D6s earlier.
Yeah.
You get 1.5 your sneak attack damage on every hit. And then half your sneak attack damage to a second
level,
creature.
That is, and you round up, so that's going to be 14d6 against 14d6 the first person.
That is obscene. And again, what's your proficiency at this level? Plus
six at this level.
Six? So then you're going, okay, so you can use that effectively on most... you've now got 12 uses of that thing during combat. So every sneak attack, you could basically be doing... 14d6, and then again, 9d6 to a second target.
5d6.
5d6, sorry, 5d6.
Only
for a second target.
5d6.
only 5d6 to a completely second target who you have to be. And again,
they
it's
can't
30
resist.
Feet.
That's the thing. They and can't again, stop yeah, you from doing it. There's no save.
But also, the wording of the whale thing very specifically says it's within 30 feet of the target that you've hit or that you've
so you can just shoot
them.
Hurt.
Yeah. So you don't have to be within 30 feet. So as long as the targets are close to each other. At like say the beginning of a round, then
go for it.
Yeah, golden. You're golden. And then basically the last thing is at the end of a long rest, a soul trinket instantly appears in your hand if you don't have any soul trinkets. So basically, you always start off with at least one soul
you
trinket.
You automatically have 7 uses of this per day.
It's
no
so It's so this is super broken from a pure features and damage output. Like this is a bit of a one man like tank sort of situation for me. Like
really
of course hit points and stuff is going to be difficult, but like just in terms of hitting this thing, if you are in any way like in an urban setting, hitting this thing is going to be so freaking difficult. It is going to bamf out of the wall, probably have advantage to hit the target, do sneak attack, then go bamf back into the wall using its dash action. Like it's just, and then when it kills you, it's going to bring you back and ask you a question about how you solve the riddle that you're left
or
behind.
Exploit your soul to use to make cause whales of the death to hurt your friends.
Oh, and that's also the thing. It's not like hold on, let me just double check this.
While you're looking that up, I just want to say this is actually, for those of you who listen to our Wagadu stream, which you should if you're not, you should just go listen to it. Go listen to it right now. After this. That is the subclass of rogue that Rafa Lou Wilson's character was.
Very cool.
Yes.
Just to clarify as well, Whales from the Grave requires no action.
Yeah.
So you're doing that, you know, you're spamming that. Yeah. You just spamming it. It's just so effective. It's so effective, guys. But yeah, and then I just wanted to point out that I just think it's a really, really cool roleplay class as well. Like, I think that I really wanted to combine this. Yeah, exactly. I would love to combine this with the Reborn, the UA. I think it would be, you would effectively, like the idea that I would go with is you've literally come back as a ghost with like a physical form, like some sort of physical form, or like you're a ghost who's bamfed into a body. The only thing that kind of doubles up. Yeah, basically. And the only thing that kind of doubles up is the fact that you get advantage on death saves, like twice. But, you know, I think if you talk to a DM, there's probably a, you know, something that you could do, you know, as an option. But I mean, you've got more than, you'd have more than enough features. But that combo as well would mean that with Whispers of the Dead, you could give yourself a proficiency and then Bardic Inspiration. Yeah. So effectively, in something that you have no proficiency in, you could suddenly gain your proficiency modifier, say +3, plus a d6. In something that you are literally not trained in at all.
Yep.
And that's from third level. So yeah, that's my subclass.
That's really, really good. Do we want to talk about some RP options real quick? I know we've
been
talking
we've been talking for a while, but let's talk about some quick RP options. And then I think we're going to, at some point, do some builds of these. So do let us know, do some comments if there's any particular things that you would like to see a build of. And then maybe we'll see if we can even arrange like a little mini scenarios that we could run to sort of test drive them, if you will, because I think that would be quite fun for people. But yeah, let's talk about some role play quick before we wrap up this episode.
Yeah, I wanted to start by saying typically the reason I didn't want to play rogues initially is because everybody always plays them as super dark. My backstory is so tragic, and my parents died, and my soul is filled with darkness, and I have no friends, and I just want to be alone. Like, that's what everybody.
But you do it so
does.
Well, Jeremy. That voice is so perfect for it.
Thank you. Thank you. This will be my next character. Very intense. I have no happiness, no mirth, no joy. I actually may share this. She's not a rogue, but she was meant to be kind of a parody of this style of character. She was a ranger, but her name is Lily Jackcorn, and she is a Leonin who got shrunk into a tiny little cat person. And like a really adorable kitty. And where she comes from, like she comes from a different plane of existence. And where she comes from, for her people, like the color pink is like a frightening color. And like yellow, like she killed this. I think I called it a jackcorn. It's like a combination of a jackalope, which is an American cryptid, which is basically a rabbit with antlers, and then a unicorn. So instead of antlers, the bunny has a unicorn horn. But the idea is like it's this gigantic bunny with this gigantic predatory rabbit with a unicorn horn. And she killed one and wore its hide as like a sign of power. So she's wearing this bright pink and yellow hide with this beautiful horn. She has like this rainbow colored, I think she has a rainbow colored bow. She wears like pink blush to like enhance her fearsomeness. So basically like this absurdly cute little chibi Leonin, who is also incredibly edgelordy and like, does not see anything she's doing as cute. But I'm not usually a fan of edgelordy characters, but this class can lend itself to that, even though the inspiration again was Bilbo Baggins, who is the opposite of a dark and worthless character.
I think that you raise a good point, because I think that there's so much more that you can have with an assassin. Like, I think I remember when I think I came up with my first character, which was a rogue, and I played in your game, Lamora Canthus. Like, I think that there was probably a bit like of me being like, he's a little edgelordy, but like he's just super chaotic. He was a swashbuckling rogue and was just like, I'm here to have, like, this is hilarious.
And you
so
had
fun.
Friends. You were a nice person who got along with people.
Absolutely.
He had a girlfriend that he wanted to get back to.
Yes, exactly. This is also the thing that confuses me about the way people play rogues a lot of the time, is like they're super high charisma most of the time. Most people build rogues with high charisma. And I'm like, you don't have to, you don't just have to use the charisma score to give you good deception. Do you know what I mean? You could use the charisma to just be like, hey, I get along well with people. Maybe throw in a couple persuasion rolls instead of deception rolls, you know? You don't have to lie about everything. Yeah. He says, who Mooty, the guy who plays Mooty, who literally lies through his teeth all the time. Literally about everything.
I just think they're really cute, because then nobody's... You know, no one's aware when I...
Suspects a thing.
Yeah, suspects a thing, yeah. I just play them really adorable. That's all I do. And really sweet. And then sneak attack.
I like this idea.
Yeah. Super cute, and then stab them in the neck.
That's honestly the I have actually made a character like this, but it's for a different show. So keep a lookout. You'll be able to see this somewhere very soon, hopefully. But that was exactly the idea behind my Firbolg rogue mastermind that I made, was just the idea of using perceptions against people and being like, oh, you think Firbolgs are so cute and cuddly? Okay, cool. I'm going to use this to my advantage. And then when you're turning around, I'm like, ha-ha. And also, I think we have a perception of people who kill people, obviously, in fantasy terms, as being like incredibly like dark and broody or whatever. But like, if you're an assassin, you're kind of used to it.
Yeah, it's a job.
So like, it's just job. Your job.
Go like, file your taxes, the guy from Rick and Morty, point, like.
Crombopulous Michael or something.
Yeah.
Oh boy, here I go killing again. I just love killing. Just like this really affable mass murderer.
Scout Master Denny, but as a rogue.
Oh no, this incredibly craven person who
craven.
This craven man, Craven the Hunter. Speaking of Craven, any Spider-Man fans out there, Craven the Hunter could actually be, he'd probably be a ranger, but you could do him as a scout rogue
for sure.
But yeah, sure. Like I think it would be really, yeah, I like that idea, Jasper, playing like a nice person who's just capable of doing, you know, intense stuff. Or if you really want to go steer away from the combat focus of most rogue subclasses, you could build somebody with low dex, but really high mental abilities. So like really high charisma and wisdom and intelligence, so that you're talking your way through situations. And then once you get in a fight, you're like, okay, I'm gonna hide.
Well, you could even go then just like full support class, basically.
Yeah, run a rogue
in combat. And you know, if you went for a mastermind, for instance, you get to use the help action as a bonus action. So there's a bunch
that
of stuff that you
perfectly.
Could do.
You're the person pulling the strings. Yeah. Why are you running
pulling
up to the front lines? You just tell people
what to do.
Like it's like the full, you know, it's a Sherlock Holmesy type, you know, deal. Just point Watson, tell them where to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Moriarty. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, I definitely think there's options there. I'm trying to think as well if there's I'm trying to think how to justify just Because I also think there's definitely a version of this where you could play like the hapless swashbuckler or something. I feel like I would really enjoy that, of just like someone who just fully doesn't intend to kill people. But like if you said like had like a halfling and you built Lucky as a part of their like personality. So like effectively like
Buster Keaton. Like,
oh, I don't mean to, you know, they like, yeah, they do like the forward roll and accidentally loose a dagger directly in between the eyes of the monster that's attacking. You know what I mean? Like I just feel like that would be really entertaining.
Buddy, just pull up Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean is the Phantom Rogue.
Mr. Bean, literally, the Phantom Rogue
or Assassin Rogue.
He just does so much damage in the round. And just like, oh no, I'm so sorry.
Now I am become Bean, Destroyer of Worlds.
I am Bean.
Unati, you play. You were mentioning that you really like the Tiefling combo with the Rogue. Mm. When you play tieflings, are your tieflings, do they usually follow that cute model?
Oh no, that's when I'm going straight like Edgelord. Like, we're going in, and then we're like multi-classing into a fighter as well. Mm. Like, I just want
the classic rogue.
Yeah, just want all the damage. Just want everything. which can be fun. Honestly, it's setting dependent. So like, I do like a tiefling rogue fighter in a very like military-based society. So, like, I kind of need an edgelord, otherwise I'm going to die. Like, I'm not going to make it if, like... I mean, I don't necessarily play them, like, super dark and brooding with no friends and can't make friends and, like, alienating. I obviously will make friends with people and try to form connections. But, like, I just need them to be, like, absolute machines. Total machines, and then because they're tieflings and they stick out like a sore thumb, they're gonna be a little broody, and they've got a cat usually. Yep. I've got a thing for cats and tieflings, clearly.
always cats.
There's an unsettling number of jewel encrusted. I'm not sure if they're taxidermied cats, but they're suspiciously lifelike in shape.
This is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, but still, and super
I've never been to any of the places Unati owns to live, but whenever we do these,
which is
Zoom
surprising,
calls,
really, if just on average the amount of things that she owns.
Yeah, at this point, I've started avoiding them. out of fear.
Yeah, me too.
But I can, in the background, I can see so many, like they're
so many.
Clearly stolen cat sarcophagi. from
yeah, like if Unati ever opens one of those, she will be cursed forever.
A phantom cat will come out and she will become a real phantom rogue.
Yeah.
That honestly, I think, would make Unati very happy.
Unati, I feel like in real life, one of your classes would be a rogue.
For sure.
Just a little because
of the dichotomy specifically between very cute but vicious.
Yeah, a little. Just a little bit.
Absolutely.
Just a tiny bit.
I did actually think of just one more little potential as well, which I think might be... I mean, this could be a whole topic unto itself for us to discuss at some point. But generally, I think morality and how we use like alignment within it, I think... one thing that I often find interesting is when people play like evil characters or even neutral characters and they sort of go about doing like evil acts. And I always think like to myself, I don't necessarily know if that's how I'd play an evil character. It would just be, I would do the same things. And I think I might even try and still probably help people like to further the cause that I'm working towards, etc. But the way I view that thing is different.
Yeah.
That's the big difference for me.
Reason,
so therefore
your reasoning.
Your reasoning, exactly. And so I take Mooty as a perfect example for that. And I think you could absolutely apply this to a rogue. Whereas Mooty, with his relationship to death, doesn't view killing someone as a bad thing. Mm. Like they are passing over to another plane. He's not like all the way Kool-Aid like the other people in the White Twins.
Yeah.
But like, you know, but on a level.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
He's
like,
not on
so
that Chekatema juice.
Yeah, he's not
on the Chekatema juice, but at the same time, it's like, you know, cardinal sin is to take a life sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that even changing the potentially changing just your outlook on what death means to your character. If you're a phantom rogue, then death is like what you do. It's everything that like makes up you and everything. So I don't think that you would necessarily view it as a bad thing. You'll be able to talk to them if they're dead. It doesn't like, I mean, it's not like they're going away anywhere.
Yeah.
Like they'll still be there.
I have a piece of you with me at all times.
Yeah. I guess also when I'm looking at morality with rogues, I tend to operate on how self-serving am I? like, where is my line of selfishness as opposed to is this right and wrong? Kind of go, well, of course I'm going to help you and help the party because it helps me get more gold or whatever the fuck I'm after, right? So if, when I look at it that way, as opposed to like evil or neutral, I'm just like, how much of the choices that I make are directly in line with helping me out and serving my best interests?
Yeah, and also like I definitely think there could be a thirst for in knowledge and improvement and like sharpening and honing of skills. Like, you know, they're a skill based class. Like, I absolutely think that could be what drives a rogue. You know, I think what we're trying to say is there's a lot more options in terms of like thinking of that like primary focus or primary target when building a rogue and what their kind of like motivations are, as opposed to just like, I kill people because that's the way I am, you know, because my
their blood runs as dark as my soul.
Yeah, literally, like because someone came along and killed my parents,
everyone else's parents.
Yeah, literally, this is a genuine thing. Your parents can be alive. Like, it's kind of refreshing when my players come to me and they're like, my parents are alive and well. I'm like, oh, what a pleasure. Like, both just two functioning. It's kind of a bit like when you meet a friend whose like parents are still together. You're like, oh, this is, yes, good. I like this. I'm very happy for this. This is good. As opposed to, you know, so yeah, it's totally fine. It's totally fine to have to come from a nice, stable, and healthy family background. Home,
and still be
and still make poor choices. Yeah, and still make poor life choices. That's fine. So I hope this has been helpful for some of you folks at home who have been maybe considering playing a rogue. Why don't you tell us what class you'd like us to do next, and we'll do another one soon. I've really enjoyed we have spoken for a while.
Yeah,
I really hope not too much of this gets cut because there was some good stuff in there.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. We've talked about this for a while, but you know. Really enjoyed it. Given me some food for thought. I'm definitely dipping back into rogues now. I've been ignoring them for a while because I was like, I want to be a spellcaster. But
Mooty goes full rogue after this.
Yes. Yeah. I'm retraining as rogue, entirely rogue.
I'm just frowning let us know what you think. The rest of the Wagadu session is like.
I can't believe
that.
Right, here we go. Okay. Phantom rogue goes to the floor.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh. Great. Hey, Mooty could be a phantom rogue. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Like,
that build does what makes sense. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know what you want us to do next. We'll definitely have a think about digging into some more of the subclasses. We know we missed some of the subclasses out, but we just wanted to focus on the ones that we particularly liked. If you want to find out more about us or you want to follow us, you can do so at TB Halflings. You can also follow me on Twitter at JW_Cartwright. Yonati, where can I follow you on Twitter?
At LULewisNyo.
Yeah. I think so. I do believe that is it. Yeah. Jeremy is not on Twitter, but I think if we start a strong enough campaign, everyone, Jeremy will eventually succumb to peer pressure and make a Twitter account. So
I actually do have a Twitter account, just no one knows it exists.
Find Jeremy's Twitter account. This is your new task.
I'm going to go change the name of my Twitter account to make it harder to find.
Yeah, don't think you can change the at bit. Can you change the at bit? I think once that's been made, I don't know
if you
can change it.
Pretty annoying if you couldn't, honestly.
You can change like how it appears, but like the actual at
I may just deactivate the Twitter account and start a new one.
Quickly, go now. Go now, halflings. Type in Jacob, J Money, J Bizzle.
Cobble, it's buttery time.
Marvelous. And you can also at TB Halflings is everywhere you can find us on all of our social medias. Please also come hang out on our Discord, and if you would like some more TB Halflings goodness, then you can check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings.
You can even suggest
that's
a
about
for
everything.
Me.
You can even suggest a nickname for Jeremy, but I think that's about it for everything this week. I'm wrapping up, and I will see you all next week. So long, Shire Folk.
So long, Shire Folk.